Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're going to play on and stand strong with Drolo and Dibs. Turn the game on. Bump up the volume. It's time to play ball. Drolo and Dibs. Turn the game on.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the championship rounds of Drolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Ethan Strauss set to join us in about 5 minutes at 9:10 to talk a little Warriors. Chris Spielman, the four-time Pro Bowler and three-time All-Pro linebacker, coming up at 9:35. We've got a lot to get to in the last hour of the show, beginning right here.
Off the steal, it's Mitchell. Back it goes! And Neal with the lob from Mitchell, who is putting on a show.
Shout out TNT for the audio. Those sultry sounds you hear are none other than Utah Jazz fans losing their mind as the hometown team defeats the Houston Rockets 107-91 on Monday night, extending their best of seven series to a game five, which will take place Wednesday in Houston. Here's the current schedule. Had the Bucks and the Rockets both swept their respective series last night, the Bucks handled their end of the equation, the Warriors would be playing at 6 o'clock on Wednesday. However, you don't need to worry about that anymore. The Rockets failed to hold up their end of the bargain. They will play at 5 p.m. on Wednesday. The Warriors will follow them up on TV 7:30 p.m. at Oracle for Game 5. How big an advantage for the Warriors that the Rockets couldn't close out the show in Salt Lake City last night?
I guarantee you the guys are watching. You know they're watching games just like the Rockets watch the way that the Warriors play. That was one of their clapping saying, yes, these guys got to play again. One thing that we've all been talking about, it's James Harden. We know the wear and tear that this guy puts on, especially in the playoffs, the heavy lifting that he has to do. He is that team far, especially the prolific scorer that he is. I think this puts a lot more pressure on him. We talked about, hey, we'd like to see them play in the finals, Western Conference Finals, because of all the wear and tear on James Harden. So this, by extending this, now they got to play against Wednesday, and we don't know. It could be, you know, that Utah's been playing pretty well as of late. Maybe they can continue to extend this. So I think the Warriors, without a doubt, are in a great place now. They need to go out there and just take care of business, because that way, if something were to happen, they're already rested.
The players obviously care that they lost, right? But do you think that they care to the extent that fans care when it comes to these discussions? The idea that they could have had two extra days of rest, but then the Warriors ended up handling their business and the Rockets didn't handle theirs. We get mixed up in that, and handicappers get mixed up in that. And a lot of people who are trying to predict and prognosticate how it's going to play out will use that as evidence for or against their case. Do you think they actually care? Do you think they're coming home going, damn, we just cost ourselves two extra days of rest against
without
the Warriors?
Without a doubt. I think without a doubt. And Lowe could speak to it better than anybody, although in football you kind of know it's going to be a week between games, and unless you lose
Thursday night game.
Well, and also if you lose in week 17, I was thinking if you fall out of the division title and now you got to play wild card weekend, it's like, oh, okay, well, I was looking forward to that week off, and instead you don't have it. And in this case, especially James Harden, you're coming off a stinker of a game in game 3, but you won. Game 4, you don't play much better. 11 for 39 over your last two. If you could have held that lead after three quarters and won that game, you're absolutely thinking two additional days off, which this time of year, I know James Harden, a guy who leads the league in usage, the amount of times the ball goes through him on the offensive end, you would love to have those two additional days, plus the psychological edge of knowing that the Warriors would have to play on Wednesday and you wouldn't, and plus that final little piece of additional flight. Now you got to fly home and play. It's not fly home and chill as opposed to Netflix and chill. This is fly home and chill. Now you got to fly home and lace them up. So I think it definitely is a factor.
What was that number? You said 11 and 39?
11 for 39 over his last two.
What if that was Klay Thompson, or what if that was Durant? What if that was Steph Curry? 11 of 39 over the last two. We would be going around here saying the sky has fallen. What's going on with Klay? What's going on? Here's a guy, prime example of workload. We talk about James Harden, 11 of 39 in the last two games. That tells you a couple things. He could be getting tired. He's asking him to do too much. And now we're in the playoffs where he's got to expend more energy. 11 of 39. That is not good.
He has an entirely new workout program for this year because he knows what everyone's saying about him, which is that he fades in the playoffs. It didn't just happen last year. It happened the year before that as well. So he was actually increasing his workload. He would get these workouts in earlier in the day, then the sessions would start with the team, and then he would stay late to do more additional stretching and working out. For the course of the season, you're going to average 36 points a game. Obviously, it looks like it's working out. This is just a two-game sample, and granted, both games took place at elevation, which is one of the reasons you want to try to avoid Denver and Utah in the playoffs because they're rumored by many to have the best home court advantage in all of basketball. Any analytical mind you come across will give you numbers breaking down those two as having the best home court advantage in basketball for pretty much that reason. But the idea now that he's got to turn around and win this game, does anyone think either series goes to a sixth game? The Warriors are a 14-point favorite Wednesday night, and then you've got the Rockets as an 8-point favorite Wednesday night.
No, I don't think either one of these series go to a sixth game. I think that both of these games will be over. I just think that when you look at a guy, anyone, if you get a guy and he's running, you do a track workout and you got to run 5 200s and you got to run them back to back to back, your speed and your time starts to decrease. Yeah, you want to hold it and you try to do that. Here's James Harden, a guy that we understand is a prolific scorer. We understand he's going to get the end one. He is the most creative guy when it comes to getting fouled. You see how many the free throw disparity Dibs had, over 200 more than anyone in the association. Unbelievable. But yeah, these two teams will end it. But if you're asking James Harden to continue to carry this team, that's what I like. I enjoy when he is a volume shooter and his team depends a lot on him because it will wear him down in the playoffs.
Especially knowing that game one would be out here most likely Sunday. So if they both do close out Wednesday, you got Thursday, Friday, Saturday off. But the Warriors will play at home in game five and stay home. Houston's got to fly back from Utah, win at home, spend a day or two, and then fly out here. It's going to be more taxing on the Rockets for game one.
To the phones we go. He covers the Golden State Warriors for The Athletic. Ethan Strauss joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Ethan, good morning, and thank you for your time. We'll bring you right into the conversation. Houston's loss at Utah last night. Do you think that's going to play a, I'm not going to say significant role in their next series with the Warriors, but losing those two extra days of rest against Golden State, how do you think that factors in?
I think it is a factor. I think a lot of people, and you guys are right to focus on it, forget about it and just think that these guys are robots. Rest is huge in the NBA. These series are wars of attrition. Remember what happened last time, right? The Warriors had an injury with Iguodala, and they kept the pressure on Chris Paul. They could have lost that series, but they kept the pressure on Chris Paul. I mean, that's the other one to focus on. It's not just about James Harden. Paul, the Warriors really tried to wear out in that series. They would full court press him sometimes. Sean Livingston was just in there at points. He didn't have much responsibility other than harassing Chris Paul all the way up and down the court. And maybe, hey, correlation isn't causation. Maybe it just happened randomly, but I think that he broke because of that. I think his hamstring exploded because of the amount of pressure that the Warriors were exerting there. So to not have rest, that does matter. It does matter. The degree to which, hard to say, but it does matter. And I think it is big for the Warriors that it happened last night.
We don't want to look too far ahead to other series that are coming up, but did Utah show in last night's game a way that you can slow, if not control, Houston? You do your best to contain Paul and Harden, but you absolutely eliminate everyone else. Clint Capella, a minus 20, just 4 points. Is that really the secret sauce to handling Houston?
I'm not sure what the secret sauce to handling Houston is, but Utah does an interesting thing where they sort of just chase Harden. They don't play in front of him, and it's very strange to see it. And I suppose if they're so reliant on the three-point shot, if that's what James Harden wants to do as a step back, maybe you do play behind him and just chase from behind. I think they are giving some cues and some clues as to the best defense against the Rockets. I think from the Jazz perspective, though, Rudy Gobert's just never had a place in that series. Last night, again, it seemed like Utah made its big runs without him, and I just don't know what they think they're doing with him. It just seems like they should use favors, and maybe they wouldn't win anyway, but this is making it impossible.
Bigger surprise in which series? When you look at the Rockets, what they're able to do, and what the Warriors, biggest surprise that both these series are extended to a game five, or are you surprised which team in you thought that was going to be more of a dominant?
I think it's not too surprising. A five-game series is pretty decisive usually, and especially, I mean, it might even be more surprising that it's only five games with Utah-Houston, because Utah's a quality team. I mean, Utah would be competing for best team of the East, other than Milwaukee, perhaps, if it was in the other conference. It's a formidable opponent, and this just happens to be a bad matchup. So that series, if anything, should have been more competitive. As far as the Warriors versus the Clippers, that probably should have been four games. The Clippers just aren't good enough. For everything great going on there, the new ownership, getting Kawhi Leonard possibly over the summer, they just do not have enough talent. Their best player is perhaps Danilo Gallinari, who has been awful the last few games. So if anything, the Clippers should just feel proud getting it to five.
Ethan Strauss from The Athletic joining us here on 95.7 The Game. You have been around this Warriors team for a while, and it feels like anyone we've talked to who's been in that situation says that there's less joy and, shall we say, less of a cordial relationship amongst the players than there has been in the past. That's fine. You're around each other so often on such a frequent, high-intense basis that things are naturally going to get, you know, acrimonious at times. But what you see around this team, is there a chance they could all stay together for the most part heading into free agency and beyond? Obviously, Bogut will go back to Australia and Sean Livingston might retire, but do you see any scenario playing out where the core guys are still together after the free agency period?
I mean, I guess there's a chance. It would just be surprising to see it, and you wonder what conversations would have to take place, what apologies would have to be made for it to be feasible. I would be very surprised. I would be surprised if it went that way. I would assume this. I would say this much. The only way that I could envision a chance at that happening would be if they win the championship again. I think there's zero chance if they don't win the championship that there's any kind of impetus to keep this thing together. But I maybe, possibly could foresee a scenario where, despite whatever commitments may or may not have been made to a certain team in New York City, the championship is won, and maybe you get some cold feet. Maybe some minds are changed. Maybe, just maybe, when the media decides, no, now we think Kevin Durant is the best player in the world, that perhaps Durant sees the wisdom of staying on this team if he can have that mantle and win championships. Maybe such a thing can happen. I just don't think it's going to happen.
It'll be fascinating to see what happens as we approach July 1st and the official free agency signing period. You wrote a piece for The Athletic today talking about Andrew Bogut and the key to the Warriors maybe being dirty diapers. Please explain.
That's one way to put it. I wish I put that in the headline. That would have been great.
Next time, call me, Ethan. I'll hook you up.
That is from a section of the article where Bogut was talking about his renewed perspective and that how basically it's hard to really dwell and be anxious on the result of the games like he did in the past. If he comes home, and he's got, I think, a toddler and an infant right now, and there are dirty diapers to do. You forget about it. There's another job to do. That's what you focus on. You got to focus on your kids. And Steve Kerr and Bogut are saying that having kids has completely changed his outlook. He used to be a little bit more grouchy, a bit more of a cynic, and now he seems to be so appreciative back around with the Warriors this time. And he's just bringing a totally different vibe. You talk about the vibe around the team and the lack of joy. Bogut almost seems like he didn't get the memo because he's happy. He's talking about June. These guys don't even really talk about June that often. It almost seems like winning a championship is a chore, but Bogut seems excited to do it. So that signing, sending assistant GM Larry Harris out to Australia and getting Bogut, now is all the more crucial because of what's happened with Cousins, but it seems to have really been a home run at the exact right time for this team.
Would you be looking at this game coming up and thinking about where the Warriors, what they need to do to take care of business? What is one of the obstacles that they can't allow to happen in order to get through the Clippers?
Not having the effort level where it needs to be, which has tended to happen especially at home. Maddeningly so this season. There have been so many so many camera shots of Joe Lacob with his arms crossed looking dyspeptic. And you have to avoid that. I think the Clippers have run out of talent. I just don't see it happening. But it would be very in keeping with this Warriors team for them to mess around and send us back to L.A. for a meaningless Game 6. That would be very the season. You know, that would have everybody on media row shaking their heads knowingly if such a thing were to occur. I don't think it will, but if it did, it would be in keeping.
Ethan Strauss from The Athletic joining us here on 95.7 The Game. You recently spoke with Steve Kerr about the danger of the next question approach that athletes like Russell Westbrook are taking with the media. If he doesn't like the columnist, he says next question, it becomes, you know, controversial, and then we talk about it the next day. Kevin Durant has been at odds with the media at times. You know, this is a story as old as...
I know something about that.
Yeah, as sports itself. You know, speaking to Kerr, what did you learn from him during that conversation?
Well, he's got his own perspective, having been a former broadcaster, having been in the media in his own way, and he's thought a lot about it. And his position is that this helps sell the league, that this comes with the territory, that maybe it's annoying. And look, these tensions existed in the 1990s where players were mad at reporters and didn't always want to talk to them. But ultimately, this access is the way that fans connect. And I wonder, you know, I feel a little ambivalent about it because I do wonder, okay, we don't know anything about the NFL players, and that league is really popular. So I'm not sure how much we need to know about these guys. But then I thought about it some more, and I thought about, you know, Klay Thompson is somebody that the fans love. They love Klay Thompson, and they connect to his persona. He's got some sort of zen to him, some sort of accidental, unintentionally funny charisma, but that all comes from his having to do media appearances that he would never, ever do if it were up to him. And that's not because Klay hates the media. It's not because Klay's mad about stories that were written about him. It's just that he would be off doing something else, like going fishing off of Jack London and accidentally catching a shark, which did happen, by the way. And it's just totally part of the whole Klay Thompson aura. But we wouldn't know about any of that stuff. So as easy as it is, and I've heard a lot of people saying these press conferences are boring, I don't know what we're getting out of them, and hey, we might have too many of them, we do end up getting the information that constructs the persona of these players that we talk about, and that is ultimately something that the fans connect to, and that is very important for the popularity of the league.
What's the end result, then, of how this process plays out? Because it seems like reporters who are closer, for lack of a better way to describe it, to the players, they get access that other reporters don't get. Some reporters get the next question response. Others get exclusives. How is the media going to proceed as we continue down this social media rabbit hole?
Yeah, it's always a difficult dance to do because sometimes if you're honest about people, they get really mad at you. That might be a self-serving explanation for the thing with KD and myself in February, but that was certainly my interpretation of it, given that nobody has ever come to me from the organization or otherwise and told me what was in that article that was incorrect. So I think that's just always part of the game. That's always part of how it is, and there is a trading of favors that can take place. I look at it as I think it's okay to have a guy or two who has the Westbrookian approach, but you just don't want it to spread. I think that's the problem for the league. I think that when Kerr says dangerous, that's what he means. I think if Russell Westbrook wants to play into his persona of hating the media and hating Barry Trammell and wants to say next question, I think we're all going to live. I think the league is going to keep on trucking. But if, as you saw, Paul George, who doesn't have that image, says next question as he did, and then it's not just Paul George, it's a bunch of other stars, at that point you have a real problem for the league. A league, by the way, which has seen its ratings drop recently, which has seen a lot of these players become less popular in the eyes of the fan, which has seen Anthony Davis, a guy people liked, wearing a That's All Folks shirt, appearing to mock the New Orleans fans on the way out and talking about himself as a brand and a corporation on LeBron's show, The Shop. So I think that the league does have a bit of an image problem with its players, and the players are resentful of a lot of what they have to do for the league. And I'm not sure how Adam Silver is going to fix the whole thing, but it is a problem right now that the NBA has to solve.
Ethan, when you think about a guy like Kevin Durant and you see all the things that surround him. You know, Steve Kerr had some interesting takes and get him going. And you see Kevin Durant's been shooting the ball over 20 sometimes a game. Do you see this team going to Steph Curry tomorrow early to try to get him back on track? Or what's your take on that?
I don't think this team worries about Steph like that. I think this team looks at it as, hey, Steph had a bad shooting game, and he's going to be fine. He's not the squeaky wheel that they are concerned about. I think they look at it as, we want Kevin to shoot 20 to 30 times if he can, because he has an unblockable shot, and all that sharing is carrying stuff is great in the regular season, but this is the playoffs now, and you need to generate shots against harder defense, and there's no real defense against the 7-foot guy with the unblockable turnaround jump shot that goes in over 50% of the time. So I think they care more, have more concern with KD, but maybe they shouldn't, because maybe they just have less power over whatever KD's going to do. It seems like Durant's going to do whatever he wants to do. As per whatever Kerr wants, it seems like Durant is going to disagree with that in public. And hopefully, in the end, he and they share the same goals and win a championship together, but it is a strange scenario and one that absorbs far more attention than the scenario with Steph Curry, because with Steph, he's just low maintenance. He's going to do whatever he needs to do and whatever he's asked to do.
He covers the Warriors for The Athletic. Ethan Strauss with us here on 95.7 The Game. Great stuff, Ethan. We appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much for jumping on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
In virtually any one of these situations where you're forced to pick a side, right, like Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, or Russell Westbrook versus the media, there's always going to be a case made for each side. There's going to be someone there that says, here's why Russ isn't in the wrong, here's why the media isn't in the wrong. But then take yourself through the other evidence you have. Russell Westbrook versus teammates, him and Kevin Durant, not a good ending. Russell Westbrook versus fans. In Utah last year during the playoffs, he slaps the phone out of the fan's hands. This year, he has the altercation with the fan who ends up getting the lifetime ban. Russell Westbrook versus the media. Next question. If you wake up in the morning and you run into a jerk at lunch, you ran into a jerk at lunch. If you wake up in the morning and you run into jerks all day long, you're the jerk. That's the scenario there. You're the jerk. If every encounter you have throughout the course of your day comes complete with an issue, you're the only thing in that scenario that is the constant. You are the jerk. So Russ versus the fan last year, well, the fans are on top of the players. They don't have any room. Okay, I can see that. Russ versus the media, well, Barry Trammell doesn't write flattering things about him. I can see that. Russ versus KD, well, KD left. He said he was going to stay. Okay, I can see that. I can see them all individually. Right up until you put the entire picture together and you realize the only constant in every one of these fights is Russell Westbrook. Every single time you lay one of these out, Russ is involved in it. And at that point, you start to think to yourself, is Russ just the most unlucky human being alive, or is he just a jerk? You can pick whatever side you want to be on there, but there's a lot of evidence leaning one way over the other. Chris Spielman, 4-time Pro Bowler, set to talk NFL draft next.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
The latest installment of Bet 162 coming your way in about 12 to 13 minutes. We got hot over the weekend. Reza, if you're out there, we want you to call us up. And personal promise, no getting kicked off the air this time. No getting kicked off the air. Now, the phone may disconnect. There's a small percentage of that, but I am not personally setting you up. Rez's two phone calls have resulted in two wins for us. I don't think his second parlay won, but he is welcome back on the program because he is good luck. The number's 888-957-9570. Reza, if you want to call in with your pick, I promise no hanging up today. You can pick whatever you want. I promise. I stake the show's reputation on it, so I would not burn the show's reputation for that. Just letting you know, 888-957-9570. To the phones we go. 4-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro linebacker. You can check him out now as a terrific analyst for the NFL on Fox. He's going to be on Fox Sports Radio's draft coverage this year. Chris Spielman joining Joe Lowendibs on 95.7 The Game. Chris, great to have you on the show, man. Thanks for your time. How's life been treating you?
Life's good. I missed San Francisco, though, since I spent the last 4 weeks out there. It was great.
You were on the call for a bunch of Niners games in the last couple of years, if I remember correctly, right? I don't know if it was last year, but I remember always getting a heavy dose of Chris Spielman.
6 or 7 of them, and so I know that team pretty well. So I think I think coming into this draft, you know, I know what they need, but let's see if they think that what I know, they know, so they draft the right guy here.
All right, so what are you thinking? Because as a Buckeye yourself, I'm sure you have quite the opinion on Nick Bosa.
Well, yeah, I think he's the best pure outside pass rusher, and it's clear that the 49ers need some type of pressure. I mean, if you think about Nick, the one thing about him is not only can he go outside, put him and he can rush inside, so you have he and DeForest Buckner on an inside pass rush, man. That helps any outside pass rusher because those guys will command so much attention. But if you like Joey Bosa, you'll like Nick Bosa. They both play with great leverage. They have great hand coordination. They use their hands very well. Guys never get into their body, and they can close and turn that corner and close as well as anybody.
Is that ability to use their hands more important on the outside, or is it equally important for a guy maybe who's a 3-8 technique or somebody who's rushing inside in the A-gap?
I think it's I mean, if you go into NFL training camps or during the practice during the week, you know, and also in the offseason, a lot of these guys have karate guys or black belts come in and they work on hand technique and placement and the quickness of their hands. But I think with both the brothers, the one thing that they do is not only is their outstanding hand usage, but they play with great body lane, and both of them can convert speed to power, and that makes a dangerous weapon and puts a lot of fear in offensive linemen that are trying to block them one-on-one.
When you look around this the National Football League, if just so happened Nicky Bosa's off the board and, say, Arizona takes him, Chris, talk about Quentin Williams. What does he bring to the table, especially when you see what the Rams were able to do with two interior guys that could get after the quarterback as well?
Well, I mean, I think he's the best, obviously, inside guy. And if you watched his film, he's facing constant double teams, and he constantly beats those constant double teams. He's very explosive off the football. He changes direction. And anytime you can have such a beast on an interior pass rusher, it's the same thing I said about what DeForest can do. And when you, if you move Nick Bosa inside, I think that Quinton not only is an outstanding run defender, but when you have that force inside that commands double teams, how much would that allow DeForest Buckner to be left one-on-one? Or if you double in DeForest, then now you have Quinton Williams being left one-on-one. So I think either guy for the 49ers would be a great pickup. So they got a little bit of a luxury going right there, if that's the direction they decide to go.
Former NFL linebacker Chris Spielman joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Are you convinced that it will be Kyler Murray going first overall? And a follow-up to that, will it be Arizona that makes the pick?
Well, I'm not convinced of anything with the draft because who knows what can happen. I was just about an hour ago, I was on a call with a friend from Arizona, and I asked him. He said it's probably about a 90% deal, but you don't know. And I like Kyler. I think there's a lot of people that like him and a lot of people that have questions about him. I think one of the things that if size is a concern, you know, he weighed in at the combine close to 210 pounds. So he's packed pretty tight for a 5'10 guy. I don't think the NFL scouts and coaches get concerned about the stature of quarterbacks like they used to because of the success of smaller quarterbacks, whether that be Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, or even the success that Baker Mayfield had last year. The other thing about Kyler Murray is, can he throw from the pocket? Well, just watch the games. He can throw from the pocket, and smaller quarterbacks seem to be able to adjust naturally by changing arm angles, and since they've been playing quarterback their whole life, they're able to create throwing lanes and see throwing lanes and have outstanding vision to be able to deliver the ball without the ball, which you would think would be subject to being batted down all the time.
What's the adjustment that the defenses will make, in your opinion, to start to counteract some of this new offense we've seen, whether it's the smaller, more mobile quarterback or the jet sweep and the speed plays going horizontally? What are defenses going to do in the next evolution to get a leg up on these offenses?
Well, I mean, the game is all about matchups, right? And there's only so many things, in my opinion, that defenses can do. I mean, you have to be able to play man coverage. That's
sure.
Why we've seen the evolution of the nickel corner, or the slot corner. And teams will play nickel defense 70% of the time. So that guy is certainly a valued commodity. And so you have to be able to play man. I think when you play these RPOs,
for example, if what you'll see teams do now, at least what I would do and what I've noticed, and I like it, is anytime there's any type of run action in the backfield, they'll bring a linebacker right away, because if that running back's carrying out that, Lowe will probably tell you this, if that running back is carrying out a run action fake or an RPO fake, and all of a sudden you got a blitzer, you're out of balance a little bit if you have to carry out the fake, right? So it's sure. hard to adjust. So what we're seeing is teams to the play action side are starting to bring an extra pass rusher to fill that pass rush lane. And in order to do that, so you don't give an easy throw to the quarterback, usually you'll do that out of some type of man coverage or some type of press coverage where you take away the easy throw, which is the inside slant.
No question, Chris. Chris, when you think about, you said you've been around this team, we know you had a lot of games that you broadcast on.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the, in your perspective, what are some of the needs that you see that are glaring for this team if they get Nicky or if they get Quentin? What else does this team need?
Well, I think they're fine at running back. I think it was the production they got out of running back was a credit to the offensive line last year and the coaches with the amount of injuries. Having McKinnon back, the fans of San Francisco are going to love the way he plays. He's going to give you everything he has on every single down, and he'll fight for every single yard. He'll be a weapon out of the backfield. He's going to be a big addition. So it's like getting a good draft pick at running back that's going to be immediately helpful to your team. I do think wide receiver is an area that needs upgraded. I think you need some type of game breaker, some type of speed, and you need more of them. I mean, when George Kittle is your biggest threat, and I think George is maybe the best tight end in the game, I don't want my tight end to be my biggest threat on the edge. I want my tight end to be a nice supplemental guy, right? I want somebody that everybody has to account for every single play because he's going to take the top off of the defense. And I think obviously with Joe getting up there in age too, I do think as you move down through the draft, this is an offensive line and defensive line heavy draft. I think there's some really good players and a lot of good value that they'll be able to pick up. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. I was just getting ready to reset. Please keep going, Chris.
No, I mean, they need a lot of needs. You know, they need to keep their quarterback healthy. So that's the number one.
Sure, absolutely.
4-time Pro Bowler Chris Spielman with us here on 95.7 The Game. If there was a player who might go, let's say later first round, early second round, day two, a guy whose name isn't really circulating a lot that you really like, that could be a great value pick, who might that player be?
Well, it's not. I think it's not a quote-unquote sexy pick or, you know, the guy, the center out of North Carolina State is intriguing to me because he's a guy that you're going to get for 10 years. He's going to be reliable, and he could probably slide over and play guard like most of those guys. But having a solid center and able to nail that position down, And because of the, first of all, he makes all the calls. He has to be athletic. A lot of teams pull centers, which is a nice luxury to have because it gives you better blocking angles. And he's tough as heck. I think it's Garrett Bradbury, if I'm not mistaken. That's a guy that, you know, I don't know if he's like the highest rated offensive lineman or whatever, but I look at guys that I'm putting this guy in for 10 years. And guess what? And if he stays healthy, I don't need to worry about that position for 10 more years.
Good stuff. 4-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro linebacker. He's a terrific analyst for the NFL on Fox. He will be on Fox Sports Radio's draft coverage. Chris Spielman with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Chris, thank you very much for your time today. Good luck with the draft. Hopefully we can do it again soon.
Okay, man. Have a great day. God bless you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Chris Spielman, ladies and gentlemen. The Chilton Auto Body text line 95795 had brought this up. And it was something in our notes for today, but we really didn't get into. Bosa going back through his tweets and erasing the stuff that was politically charged. He tends to lean a little bit to the right. I don't want to say too much about it because then people will immediately jump to a conclusion that I'm either for or against whatever it is. People take everything as an endorsement these days, or they take it as a criticism. Bosa leans towards the right. He supports the current president. and he had a somewhat disparaging remark about Colin Kaepernick. He called him a clown, I guess. I don't know if I want to call it somewhat disparaging. I want to present the information accurately. Went through his Twitter account, realized there was a good chance he could be drafted by the Niners, come to an area that leans a little bit more left, I think would be a fair assessment, and decided to clean up those tweets, and that has now caused a bit of a stir. Should it cause a stir? Does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. I think it's smart that he went back and did that. I don't see it as a negative for Nicky Bosa, old Nicky, as Lowe would call him, at all. This is somebody who is taking a bigger perspective. And you think about any young person. I've got a couple of teenagers, and I always tell them about social media. Make sure that what you're putting out there, you're going to want to stand behind in 5 years or 10 years. When you're going to get a job, and I have a 17-year-old who's getting ready to go off to college, and in 4 or 5 years, whatever, he graduates, and you go out and you try to get that job, depending on what it is, they're going to look at your history of Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, not Snapchat because it goes away in 24 hours, but all the stuff you put out there, make sure you can stand behind it. So the fact that this young man is thinking about it in those terms, whether or not you agree with what he tweeted or not, it's controversial, and you don't want to possibly alienate a future employer. So I don't see it as a problem at all. I actually see it as a good thing.
Would it be an issue if he came here and the Niners drafted him number 2 overall? Would it be an issue for the fans to get behind him, knowing that some have seen this and they realize what way he votes? We're in a very interesting time in our country's history. People are very at odds with one another over politics. Do you think that could present an issue?
Without a doubt, some fans will, because a lot of fans, people are, like you said, they look at certain things, and no matter what, they believe something, and their perception becomes their reality. Does it make it right, wrong, or indifferent? No. These are young men, 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, whatever it may be, 22. It doesn't really matter. They have freedom of speech, and that's one of our amendments. For people to sit and just judge individuals, I think that that's wrong. I think that it, no matter what, guys, people can be racist. They can be anything that they want to be. Does it make that right? No, it doesn't make it right, but it's still their right. I've been in locker rooms where the guys necessarily didn't see eye to eye, and they might have been racist, but at the same sense, they still got along with guys, and they understand. There's every people work in a regular workforce, Joe, by heaven's sakes, and they may be racist in some sense, or whether it's black, white, racist. There's black racist. It doesn't matter. I think that as long as people know that they can collectively get along and understand that they have a job to do. But yes, to answer your question, there will be some fans out there that are on this other side, and like, because he likes Trump, they believe that this guy's a racist. And I think that it's very shallow-minded to think that way.
Do you think there's a part of him that doesn't want to come here because this isn't necessarily an area that believes what he believes?
I guess there could be that sense, but ultimately, if you're a football player like Lowe's saying, you're aligned with just the 52 other guys in that locker room. Now, I can't imagine in a huddle, defensive huddle, 3rd and 2, someone's like, hey, did you see what your guy did? It's like, now you're going to have a debate break out in the huddle.
He's black. I'm not blocking for him.
Exactly. All that stuff. Ultimately, I mean, we're not talking about, remember the Titans, where that was actually a thing and they went away to their camp and they got right and they ended up being a championship caliber team. Okay. This is pro football. It's business. And think about the four of us in this room. If you put the 12 biggest issues in America up on the board, we wouldn't go 12 for 12 on all four of us being on the same side. No chance. And yet we're able to put all that aside and do what we need to do. So I don't think that it's going to be a factor at all.
You show up on day one and you start sacking the opposing quarterback, no one's going to care. Fans aren't going to care. Fans go to a football game not to hear what the football player has to say about politics.
Right.
They by and large don't care. They just like being outraged. That's what it comes down to. People like the idea of being outraged. That's what we have now. We have outrage culture, call out culture, cancel culture. All that stuff is what takes place. If you show up, have any view you want. Just realize, no matter where you go in the country, if you say anything about either side of the spectrum, there will be people that agree with you, and there will be people that don't agree with you. That's how that plays out. If you choose to say nothing on the matter, you probably avoid it entirely. If you choose to go out and sack the quarterback a bunch of times in a season, you're not going to have to worry about anything. You're going to get your money, and people are going to love you. No one cares about that sort of stuff. Take the cues from the guys at the top of the food chain, like the Michael Jordans of the world. It's probably best to just stay away from that stuff. What was his famous line? Republicans buy sneakers
right.
too? No reason to get involved. Johnny Carson's famous line. How come you don't talk more politics on the show? Do I want to alienate half my fan base? There's no way you can make a political joke that makes everyone happy. There's no way you can make any sort of reference politically that's going to make everyone happy. So what you can do, if you're in the business of aggregating as many fans as possible, you could say nothing on the matter. Nothing wrong with that either. this is an interesting story because he goes back and cleans up his tweets. There's people on the Chilton Autobody text line saying, you know, stand by what you say. Right. So when the guy doesn't delete the tweets, we bash him for being an idiot for not cleaning up the tweets. Then when he does clean up the tweets, we bash him for not standing by what he says. It's you lose no matter what. It really comes down to the fact that it's probably the vocal minority that's speaking out. By and large, people don't care. Just go sack the quarterback.
And you mentioned it. It's the outrage culture. So you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't in this culture, and especially when it comes to something like Twitter where you put it out there and, oh, if you delete it, then you're going back on your word. But if you leave it out there, then you're an idiot.
Did Reza call in? 888-957-9570? Yeah, I hung up on him twice. It's not really surprising. Reza, if you want to call in, you still have a few moments. We'd love to have you. The update on Bet 162. I will tell you, it is very nice to have these off days. Very, very nice. Based on the weekend, here's how it played. Last Friday, Thursday. Thursday, we laid the -1.5 with the Nationals on the run line. We won that one. We came back the next night on Friday. We played under 7.5 total runs in the Pirates-Giants game. We won that one.
Yes!
Reza was involved in both of those. The problem is that Major League Baseball fixed Saturday's game.
Oh.
The Giants were down 3 runs after 5, and then, oh, okay, it's a rainout. The game's over, which is the rules in Major League Baseball. If you can't play, 5 full innings counts. So I end up losing that bet. I played the Giants. I think it was freaking Holland gave up 2 in the 5th, and then the rain came and they canceled it. So that game was fixed, and it worked against me. Came back on Sunday, didn't have time for all the nonsense. I bet no run in the first inning. Of course, the Giants get 2 ducks on the pond. Couldn't bring them in. Won that one.
Yes!
So currently down $418. Down $1,033 last Wednesday.
That's a nice bounce back.
We got it back to a manageable number. A manageable number. Today's pick isn't anything exciting.
I got to build it up, though, nonetheless.
I appreciate it. We're going to go over 8.5 runs, 1 unit. Small wager, 1 unit. Over 8.5 runs, -110. Dibs, if you need to confirm, it is right here for you to look at. I have all the books in front of me.
-110.
Over 8.5 runs. You know why? Guess who's on the mound for the Giants today? Mr. Buffet, the innings eater himself, Jeff Samardzija. I'm not trusting Samardzija one bit north of the border. I don't care what country he's in. I was an idiot for thinking that maybe he had turned the corner. He got lit up his last time out. Toronto's been hot. Toronto just swept the A's. They took 2 or 3 from the Twins right before that. So we're going to play the fact that we think there's going to be a significant amount of runs scored by Toronto. Now, I'm not playing Toronto because, A, the betting line is moving against them. People are betting on the Giants. And, B, this kid Thornton, I think his name's Trent Thornton, not to be confused with Joe Thornton. Trent Thornton's pitching for the Blue Jays today. He's a rookie. He's given up 9 runs over his last 2 starts. He's got knocked around.
And is
this playing over 8.5?
Vlad Jr., is he going to be in there?
I don't know. Is he?
Yeah, he's supposed to debut today.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Idiots. It's game 7, Leafs-Bruins tonight. Why is he debuting on a night when no one in Toronto is going to watch a game?
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's so much going on in Toronto. It's always a busy night north of the border.
So stupid. It's just so stupid. You've got the Raptors making a playoff run. Don't they play tonight to close it out? I'm almost convinced they do. Mm. How bad a business is this? Bringing it up.
Yeah.
Processing. There it is. Yeah.
Tuesday.
So tonight you have game 7 between the Leafs and the Bruins, one of the most storied rivalries in hockey. Then you have the Magic at the Raptors in a closeout game, and they're bringing up Vlad Jr., the most highly touted prospect in 2 decades, is coming up to make his debut tonight. Oh, but the Giants are in town, so everyone should be tuned in.
It's a Canadian news dump.
Under 5,000 fans at this game. Under 5,000. Under actual 5,000 bodies at this game. Not paid attendance or the other gimmicks they use. Under 5,000 people at this game. Do you see how many people showed up for the Pirates series against the Giants?
It's packed.
It's nobody. All 3 games, if you combine them, you can fit all those people in the stadium for 1 game. And then still have another 5,000 seats. That's it. We're done. Steiny and the Guru are next. Cam Inman will join them to talk NFL draft at 11 o'clock. For Dibs, Anna, and Lowe, I'm Joe. Thank you all for hanging out with us today. Everybody, we greatly appreciate it. As always, we are back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. right here on 95.7 The Game.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.